This podcast is, of course, made possible through the support of our members and from Dartmouth Hitchcock. Imagine nationally ranked healthcare in your community with convenient locations throughout northern New England. World-class providers are closer than you think. Visit dartmouthhitchcock.org to learn more. Dartmouth Hitchcock is here.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Canoy, and this is The Exchange. Hillary Clinton gives her acceptance speech tonight at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. The former Secretary of State spoke to the convention earlier this week, acknowledging the historic nature of her nomination.
And if there are any little girls out there who stayed up late to watch, let me just say, I may become the first woman president, but one of you is next. Thank you all. I can't wait to join you in Philadelphia. Thank you.
And despite some disunity among party members early in the week, Clinton's primary challenger, Senator Bernie Sanders, gave her a vigorous show of support. Sanders joined the Vermont delegation on the floor to make it official.
And I move that Hillary Clinton be selected as the nominee of the Democratic Party for President of the United States.
With this celebratory atmosphere and at least the appearance of party unity, you might forget that Sanders defeated Hillary Clinton here in February with the second biggest rout in New Hampshire Democratic primary history. Today in The Exchange, a Granite State take on the Democratic National Convention. Let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477. Email is exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. Our guests are Chris Galdieri, assistant professor at the Department of Politics at St. Anselm College. And Chris, welcome back. Good to see you.
Thanks, Laura. Glad to be here.
And also helping us out, Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH and co-author of the book, The Four Faces of the Republican Party. And Dante, thanks for being here. We really appreciate it.
Good morning, Laura.
Well, I want to ask you both this, gentlemen, but Chris, I'll turn to you first. Conventions, of course, are about the presidential nominee, the ticket, the vice presidential nominee, but it's also about the party. What picture, Chris, do you think have Democrats presented to the nation this week?
Well, the thing that has really struck me over the last three nights is that for the first time that I can remember, the Democrats are incredibly confident and comfortable about their identity as a party and about their belief that they represent the country. And I think if you look back over the last few decades, you very often find Democrats either in a defensive crouch or in a position where they can't believe their luck. In a year like 2008, where it's like, wow, we might actually win this thing. And I think it has a lot to do with the changing demographics of the country and the fact that the parties seem to be splitting along demographic lines in a way that favors Democrats in the long term. But this is a party that just seems fine with who they are and fine with their message to the country. And that's a really unusual place for Democrats to be in recent American politics.
A defensive crouch. What's that looked like in years
sure.
past, Chris?
A good example of that would be something like 2004, when the Democrats were running against George W. Bush during a time of war, and their entire convention seemed to be, well, we're patriotic too. We understand defense too. And just this sort of sense that they, you know, felt like they didn't quite sync up with the rest of the country. And I don't get that from this convention.
What's the picture that the Democrats have presented to the country? What do you think, Dante, this week?
I think this week has been a morning in America type of convention. Now, remember back to 1984 when Ronald Reagan ran for his second term in office. The famous commercial he ran was that it's morning in America. And from Barack Obama to Michelle Obama, speaker after speaker has emphasized a very optimistic message. And that goes right along with what Chris pointed out, that Democrats seem to be in a comfort zone for the most part. But they're optimistic that the country is on the right track. And that's a classic message for the party that's in power, right? It's always change for the out party versus more of the same for the in party. But it's especially striking that given how pessimistic the message was last week from Republicans and from Donald Trump, Democrats decided not to buy into all the anxiety that is apparent among some Americans, but they decided to double down on optimism. One conservative pointed out last night, a little bit ruefully, that Obama's speech, take out maybe five paragraphs, sounded an awful lot like Ronald Reagan.
So what's the risk there, Dante? I mean, some people might say, you know, hey, I like that optimistic message. But other people might say, look, you know, ISIS is conducting attacks almost weekly, it seems, in Europe. It's terrifying. There have been some ISIS-related attacks here in this country. There have been mass shootings by, you know, non-ISIS-inspired people quite frequently at ordinary places, schools, shopping malls, churches. Economic anxiety. I mean, is there a risk to say, yeah, America's great and it's morning again?
Yeah. I mean, there's a risk in that. And I think there's also a risk that perhaps the key audience for Republicans last week, you know, white working class Republicans, perhaps their anxieties in particular have not been addressed enough in this week. But as Chris pointed out, you know, this is a diversifying country. And for all the anxiety among one part of the country, other parts of the country, especially minority voters, are more optimistic than other parts. And so Democrats, I think one reason for their confidence is that they feel as if in presidential years, they can put together the same coalition of voters, with a few tweaks perhaps, that elected Barack Obama 4 years ago and 8 years ago. They seem confident that they can put that back together again.
Chris, go ahead. You want to jump in on what Dante said, you know, upside, downside to this more optimistic message?
Sure. Yeah. Well, I think the risk of an optimistic message is that, well, what if people don't buy it, or what if they're not feeling optimistic
it
themselves?
It makes you look out of touch with people's anxieties.
Exactly. And, you know, if you think, look at an election like 2008, if John McCain had tried to run a Morning in America campaign, given the state of the economy, given how much Americans had turned against the Bush-era foreign policy, it would have been a disastrous move for his campaign. Now, we're not in that sort of a disjunction yet, but I do think there's sort of this, there's an optimistic track and a pessimistic track in the country, and the Democrats are betting that the optimistic track is bigger.
Go ahead, Dante.
And Democrats are also betting big on Hillary Clinton winning Barack Obama's third term. Like, there are two interesting statistics, right? One is that a great majority of Americans think the country's on the wrong track. So we look at that number and say Republicans must have the upper hand here. But then you look at Americans' perceptions of Barack Obama. Barack Obama is at about 51% approval numbers. That's about where Ronald Reagan was at the time that his vice president, George Bush, was running in 1988. So Obama, for all the talk about polarization and so forth, and that certainly hasn't gone away, Obama's sitting in a good place relative to other presidents in their second terms. And as Chris pointed out, far better than where, say, George Bush was for John McCain way back in 2008. So Democrats, again, are betting on – and Barack Obama's speech last night was very much a handoff of the mantle, and we saw that embrace of Obama and Clinton last night, very much a handoff where Obama said, do for Hillary what you did for me.
The exchange number for you to join us is 1-800-892-6477. Today in The Exchange, it's a Granite State take on the Democratic National Convention, and let's hear from you, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. As the convention gets ready to wrap up tonight, what are your thoughts, feelings, hopes, concerns? 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange@nhpr.org. You can always find us on Facebook or Twitter. Chris Galdieri is here, assistant professor in the Department of Politics at St. Anselm College, along with Dante Scala, associate professor of political science at UNH, co-author of the book, The Four Faces of the Republican Party. And joining us in a few moments will be Casey McDermott. She's NHPR's digital reporter. She's based at the DNC convention in Philadelphia. She's been tracking the New Hampshire delegation there, and we'll hear more from Casey on that. Gentlemen, just broadly, and then I do want to focus in on New Hampshire with you as well. Dante, how has the mood changed in the room at that Democratic National Convention from the first day to last night? Because let's be honest, it didn't start off so pretty.
No. And it didn't start pretty even the weekend before the convention, when we had that big leak of Democratic National Committee emails in which it was revealed, I don't know how much of a revelation it was, but it was revealed that, you know, people within the DNC were certainly unfriendly toward Bernie Sanders and his campaign. And there was really no smoking gun in terms of evidence that primaries were rigged. There was nothing like that. But there was clearly a sense among – you got from these emails that the Democratic elites within the party were against Sanders. And that led to Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz's resignation. She was supposed to run the whole convention. She not only departed as chair, but after a very rocky Monday, she didn't even gavel in the convention, which is the traditional honor of the DNC chair.
Well, and speaking of party elites, a lot of them from the Granite State and other states were trying to do damage control as the convention began. Here's Kathy Sullivan, former chairwoman of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, commenting on those leaked emails that led to Wasserman Schultz, as you said, Dante, stepping down as chair.
The emails, some of the things that were said were not good. And even though she had served the DNC for several years, at this point, having her continue in that role just was a distraction. But hopefully now we can turn to the important part of the convention, which is that we've got a great nominee, we've got a great vice presidential pick, and now we can move forward and concentrate on that.
So again, that's Kathy Sullivan, former chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party. Not good, to use her words. What do you think, Chris?
I think Debbie Wasserman Schultz has sort of become a symbol to a lot of Sanders supporters, even before the email leak, of the idea that the party was trying to put a thumb on the scale for Clinton and then some. And I think it was just, you know, it hit a point that it was just untenable for her to stick around, and getting rid of her was, I think, an attempt to just put this behind behind the party and try to unite around Clinton.
Well, and you did hear, again, party elites talking about that, saying, okay, not good, to use mm-hmm. Kathy Sullivan's words, but let's move on. Here's Jean Shaheen, U.S. Senator from New Hampshire, speaking with Rick Ganley on Morning Edition on Tuesday, and just saying, yeah, this is not good, but let's focus on the real issue at hand. Let's hear.
This election is not about emails at the DNC. This election is about who is going to lead this country in a way that is going to reduce the disparities between the wealthiest in this country and the poorest, who's going to try and make sure that the middle class has a way forward, that they can send their kids to college and afford that, that their children will have child care when they need it, that people can get good jobs, we can have an economy where we are creating good jobs and supporting small business, that we can make sure that the United States continues its alliances with NATO, with partnerships around the world that make us stronger. And Hillary Clinton is the person who will do that. Donald Trump is unfit to be commander-in-chief.
Again, that's U.S. Senator Jean Shaheen, a Democrat from New Hampshire, speaking at the Democratic National Convention in Philadelphia. And today in the exchange, we're getting a Granite State take on the DNC. And again, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter. So a couple more questions, guys, on this issue. And Dante, to you. So there was this controversy. The convention opens. Debbie Wasserman Schultz steps down. A lot of Bernie Sanders supporters are pretty upset. Just remind us of what happened back here in February during the primary. Bernie Sanders won New Hampshire big, so it's understandable that those people would be upset.
Yeah, and it's understandable that, I mean, the Sanders delegates are the elite core of Sanders support. I mean, we have to keep in mind that activists are a whole different class of folks from ordinary voters. I mean, these people, you know, blood, sweat, and tears for Bernie Sanders. And so, and Sanders, you know, even though he didn't come all that close to the nomination, certainly gave Hillary Clinton a good run for her money. And so to get to the convention, you know, I think there was the sense that the Sanders people needed to vent. And to their credit, I think the Democrats let them do that to some degree. And we've seen speaker after speaker, including Barack Obama, including vice presidential nominee Tim Kaine, give a shout out to Bernie Sanders and to give him credit. But that first day at the convention, that first afternoon, was a bit dicey because Sanders people were booing left and right, booing even mentions of Hillary Clinton. And even as late as last night, they were disrupting speakers and so forth. And so it'll be interesting tonight to see how Hillary Clinton herself, if the Sanders delegates here and there, some rogue delegates actually dare to speak up during Clinton's speech, which is, of course, is the showcase of the whole week.
NHPR's Casey McDermott is with us now from the DNC convention in Philadelphia. And Casey, thank you very much for being with us. We know you have been extremely busy this week.
Yeah, it's been pretty hectic following the New Hampshire delegation. Definitely no shortage of stuff going on down here.
Well, Casey, you just came from a breakfast of the New Hampshire delegation. What was the business at hand?
Sure. So all week, just for some context, the New Hampshire delegation has actually been joined by two other delegations from neighboring states, Vermont and Maine, for these breakfasts every morning. And that's where they're hearing from a number of political figures. Throughout the week, they heard from Bernie Sanders and Martin O'Malley yesterday. They heard earlier this week from Senator Jeanne Shaheen, among others. And then today they heard from Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey, as well as Governor Maggie Hassan. So, you know, they serve kind of two purposes. In the case of people like Cory Booker, Martin O'Malley, it's a chance to kind of showcase these people who are seen as, you know, rising stars or people who may have a future running for president, or in O'Malley's case, maybe running again for president in the future. And then for, you know, Governor Hassan, Senator Shaheen, Representative Annie Custer, it's just a chance to kind of talk before a crowd of activists and delegates and others, and get them, you know, kind of galvanized and energized for the campaigns and the causes back in New Hampshire.
Well, and as you said, Governor Hassan just spoke. What was her basic message, Casey?
Sure. So it was kind of interesting. She was maybe a little bit more relaxed than a lot of us are used to seeing her in New Hampshire, because it was a more casual setting. So she was among a lot of kind of peers. She started off kind of joking back and forth with Governor Peter Shumlin next door, joking, I think, that she referred to Vermont as Western New Hampshire and was kind of, you know, jabbing him a little bit. But she also kind of went into then her stump speech a bit, doing a lot to set up a contrast between herself and Senator Kelly Ayotte in the U.S. Senate race, doing a lot of what we've heard from her all along in terms of tying Ayotte very closely to Trump, very closely to the Koch brothers, special interests, a lot of these attacks that Governor Hassan has been using throughout her campaign. But she also kind of, you know, detoured into the section of the speech at the end of the speech, talking about just the importance of grassroots, the importance of taking the time to listen to your constituents, and talking about that both in the context of the presidential race and the importance of activists like the people in the room getting out there and talking to their fellow citizens to organize ahead of the presidential election, but also just talking about her personal experience as a legislator, having to, you know, duck into Dunkin' Donuts, go into the airport, have conversations with people in her community about important issues, and just have that kind of face-to-face interaction, and talking about how critical she felt like that was to, you know, to democracy in New Hampshire and more broadly.
All right. And we will get more from Casey McDermott, Chris Galdieri, Dante Scala on the Democratic National Convention and how New Hampshire people are experiencing it in just a moment. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today in The Exchange, it's a Granite State take on the Democratic National Convention. We're looking at how the events and the themes and the speakers from the convention are resonating here in New Hampshire. And let's hear from you. The Exchange number, 1-800-892-6477, 1-800-892-NHPR. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org, exchange@nhpr.org, or post a comment on our Facebook page. Find us on Twitter. Again, the number, 1-800-892-6477. With us for the hour, Casey McDermott, NHPR's digital reporter. She's at the convention in Philadelphia this week. With me in studio, Dante Scala, Associate Professor of Political Science at UNH, co-author of the book The Four Faces of the Republican Party. Also with us, Chris Galdieri, Assistant Professor in the Department of Politics at St. Anselm College. And Casey, I did want to return to you before we go to our listeners. What have Bernie Sanders supporters from New Hampshire, we talked earlier about what a strong showing Bernie Sanders got here during the primary. What are they saying now, Casey, versus the frustration at the beginning of the week?
Sure. It's actually been really interesting to watch that evolution over the course of the week. So when we started off, I think there was still a lot of disappointment. You know, a lot of people who were saying that they were definitely going to vote for Sanders and that they, you know, still had reservations about supporting Clinton, some of them, you know, pretty serious reservations. And over the course of the week, while the Sanders delegates did ultimately all unanimously back Bernie Sanders in terms of their vote at the actual convention, they also, a number of them have said that they're now coming around. Hillary Clinton, a few of them who, you know, again, just a few days ago were, you know, pretty set on backing Sanders and much more hesitant. And even just, you know, yesterday after we were, you know, we were at the hotel, I was chatting with some people just about kind of how they felt. They said that, you know, they're fine with where things stand. You know, they accept that this is where the nomination ended up. And they feel comfortable with, you know, supporting Clinton in an effort to make sure, I think kind of the main overarching goal is to make sure that Donald Trump doesn't become president.
Well, and again, Jean Shaheen has been active at this convention, got a big speaking slot. She's been speaking with New Hampshire media. Here's Senator Shaheen speaking with NHPR's Rick Ganley on Morning Edition on Tuesday, seeming to issue a warning to the Bernie or bust delegates. Let's hear.
I am reminded of the 2000 race between Al Gore and George W. Bush when people who were not happy with Al Gore in New Hampshire voted for Ralph Nader and swung the four electoral votes to George W. Bush, and that was the election. And what we saw then was tax cuts for the wealthiest in this country, an invasion of Iraq, which is a legacy that we were still involved in, and a very different country than I believe we would have had if Al Gore had been president.
What do you think, Dante Scala, about Jean Shaheen kind of laying that example out?
Yeah, it's certainly a concern. I think it's a real concern. I mean, I don't think it's just something that Senator Shaheen puts out there for the sake of party unity. But there, you know, if we're in a situation right now where not one major party candidate, but both major party candidates are quite disliked. I mean, if you kind of white out Donald Trump's name and Hillary Clinton's name and just look at their approval numbers among Americans, they're virtually identical. So there's going to be a feeling among voters, well, isn't there another alternative out there? And Shaheen remembers well what happened the last time that voters, at least even a small subset of voters, were in a mood to say, well, I don't like either of the major party candidates. I'm not going to vote the lesser of two evils. I'm going to vote third party. She remembers how that went, because if New Hampshire's four electoral votes had gone to Al Gore, Florida and the recount never would have happened, because those four New Hampshire electoral votes would have put Al Gore over the top.
Well, and I think in another week or two, we'll be looking at some of the people who are thinking about or are seriously making third-party bids. And I wonder what your thoughts are too, Chris.
Yeah, I think the specter of Ralph Nader and Florida and New Hampshire in 2000 is just something that is going to haunt the Democratic Party until there is no more Democratic Party, especially because the consequences of that were so large, as Senator Shaheen said. And I think a lot of Democrats are hearing, you know, the Bernie or bust people talking about, oh, well, I'm going to go vote for Jill Stein, who's the Green Party nominee, and that sort of thing. And they just see, you know, history potentially repeating itself. And I think the nightmare scenario would be that, you know, a lot of these young, enthusiastic Bernie Sanders supporters, maybe the ones who were, you know, toddlers or preschoolers in the 2000 election, and, you know, where Ralph Nader is just a name they don't really remember or recognize, vote in large enough numbers to swing key states away from Clinton and to Donald Trump.
And Casey, to you, the point that Dante raised about you know, unfavorability, the trust and likability problems that both of these candidates have. There are even some Democrats who say they will never vote for Hillary Clinton. What are New Hampshire delegates to the convention, Casey, saying about this this issue that, you know, at some level, there are a lot of Americans who don't like Donald Trump or Hillary Clinton?
Yeah, I mean, I think among the Clinton delegates, we just had a brief kind of Q&A with Maggie Hassan after the speech that she did, and someone asked her about that question specifically, and she just pointed to the speeches that we've been hearing all week from people, both in terms of, you know, political figures like President Obama, Vice President Biden, her husband Bill Clinton, giving these personal testimonies about the Hillary Clinton that they know, and also the everyday people that are being, you know, presented at the convention with their stories of how they feel like Hillary Clinton is going to stand up for them and affect their lives. So that's something that the Clinton supporters are pointing to. I think on the Sanders side, I haven't heard a lot of talk about that being raised in the conversations that I've had this week. I know that's something that's come up earlier when I've talked to some of those delegates, but at this point, it seems like they're pivoting their focus on, you know, accepting that maybe Hillary Clinton is not the perfect candidate in their eyes, but as I said before, they feel confident in supporting her and doing so in large part because of the opponent that she's facing. So I think it going back to your original question in terms of the unlikability of both of the candidates, from the Democrats' perspective here, they're really trying to play up and focus on the unfavorability of Donald Trump and using that as a galvanizing force as they head into the election.
Go ahead, Dante.
Yeah, I guess two things. One is, I mean, as much as we look at conventions and say, well, these are hopelessly old-fashioned events, why do we still do these things?
And who's watching beyond the hyper-interested people?
But you get a sense that, you know, for the people who are there, I mean, it is reminiscent of why we started these things in the first place, because political parties have a chance for elites to get together from all parts of the country and convene. And it can be something of a cathartic event, because then all these people go home to their various states to work for various Democratic campaigns. So I think that's one thing. The other thing is, it's striking the contrast between this week and last week. Last week, what we talked about was, where are all the usual suspects for Donald Trump? Where are the traditional Republican surrogates for Donald Trump? Where are the former presidents? Where's Mitt Romney and so forth?
Or from New Hampshire, Kelly Ayotte and Frank Ginta.
Exactly. This week, we're not asking that question, because look who lined up for Hillary Clinton. Michelle Obama, Joe Biden, Barack Obama, Bill Clinton. I mean, every major A-list surrogate you could have for Clinton has been there talking on her behalf. And yet, there's still that nagging feeling as we go into tonight. How is Hillary Clinton going to perform? And will she be up to the level of her surrogates?
Well, and speaking of that nagging feeling, I've got an email here from Peg on that. And Peg says, I'm not sure I agree with your guest in their assessment of the confidence of the Democrats. She says there are many Dems out there who are appalled that HRC, meaning Hillary Rodham Clinton, hired Schultz, meaning Debbie Wasserman Schultz, onto her campaign after Schultz resigned for dirty tricks against Senator Sanders. Peg says, I hope the Trump whining ends tonight, as they're preaching to the choir and it just sounds petty. Peg says, I would like to hear what HRC has in mind for the country, Social Security, Medicare, and other relevant issues, rather than pointing out she's a role model for little girls. Peg says, I, for one, am very unimpressed with the convention. Peg, thank you so much for the thoughts. And Dante, you want to jump in there?
Yeah, well, one criticism of Reagan's Morning in America commercial way back when was that it was kind of lacking on policy specifics, and there was a big emphasis on good feeling. And Democrats have focused a lot on kind of happy thoughts and good feelings and unity and kind of flashy music videos and that sort of thing. But we'll see what Hillary Clinton delivers tonight. I mean, she's never been big on the flashy speeches. I don't think we're going to hear a Barack Obama style of speech from Hillary Clinton tonight, but perhaps what you will hear is what your caller wants to hear, because Clinton is something of a policy wonk. Maybe she will focus on kind of the details and offering those sorts of things on issues, as opposed to what she's heard before, which has been, you know, certainly in her husband's speech, an attempt to humanize and make likable someone who, can't emphasize enough, is rather unlikable in the eyes of the American people right now.
Well, speaking of flash or the lack thereof, I did want to ask you, Casey, how New Hampshire's delegation reacted to the pick of Tim Kaine from Virginia as vice president. He's decidedly the unflashy guy.
Yeah, I think so. I wasn't actually on the floor with them last night. Security was pretty tight. So while I was able to be there for a few of the other speakers just to kind of watch the crowd and see how the delegates were reacting firsthand, I couldn't get that same real-time feel with them. But just based on conversations earlier in the week and what I've seen in terms of them reacting on Twitter or posting their thoughts on there, it seems like they're pretty excited about him, interested in him. I do know I saw a Sanders delegate post something to the effect of wanting to hear more from Tim Kaine, specifically on his stance on the Trans-Pacific Partnership, which on a broader level has been a big concern among some Sanders supporters about the pick of Tim Kaine. And they're looking to hear him give a more full-throated opposition to that specifically. And some people have raised concerns just more broadly about him being more of an establishment pick, more, you know, someone who has ties to the financial industry or others. But I think overall, the reception within the New Hampshire delegation seems to have been pretty pretty supportive so far.
Well, Chris, a lot of people are saying Tim Kaine is the nice guy's nice guy. Often vice presidential candidates get the role of attack dog.
That's right. Yeah. If you think back to someone like Spiro Agnew for Richard Nixon, you know, just a relentlessly negative, you know, as you said, attack dog against Democrats in 68 and 72. Kaine put a really interesting spin on that. He was sort of he just seemed really disappointed with Donald Trump. And it was sort of like, you know, when your dad is mad at you and then you realize, oh, gosh, dad's got a point, doesn't he? And so I've never quite seen that spin on it. In general, I think Kaine is, you know, your sort of classic do no harm choice for vice president. You know, he's a well-liked candidate from an important swing state. And, you know, it's really tough to imagine, you know, a Kaine gaffe bringing down the campaign.
All right. Well, we will talk more in just a moment. Again, more of our Granite State take on the Democratic National Convention here on The Exchange. With me in studio, political scientists Chris Galdieri with St. Anselm College and Dante Scala with UNH. And joining us from Philadelphia at the convention, NHPR's Casey McDermott. You can join us, too. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Find us on Facebook or Twitter, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Casey, to you, you know, the convention is to some extent all about the speeches. And there were obviously the big ones like Joe Biden and President Obama and vice presidential nominee Tim Kaine. How about New Hampshire folk, Casey? What New Hampshire people have taken the microphone in Philadelphia this week?
Sure. So the convention kicked off on Monday with two speeches from New Hampshire residents. One of them was Pam Libengood, a woman from Keene, who spoke at a roundtable hosted by Hillary Clinton. It was actually one of her first campaign visits to New Hampshire during her 2016 campaign. And it was supposed to be a small business roundtable, but Pam actually spoke up about some of the challenges that she was having as a grandmother who was sharing responsibility for being a guardian of her grandson because his mother struggled with addiction. And that, of course, is a familiar story to a lot of people in New Hampshire right now. And Pam just talked about kind of the challenges that she was experiencing and the kind of support that she would like to see and the support that she's received since that conversation initially last year with Secretary Clinton from the Clinton campaign and the stuff that she likes in Clinton's plan to address substance misuse. So she spoke, and then immediately following her, Senator Jeanne Shaheen took the stage and focused on the opioid crisis in New Hampshire and the need to address that on a broader level. So that was interesting to see that issue that is, you know, of course, felt so deeply on a local level in New Hampshire and in a lot of other states as well, take center stage at a national convention, because that's, in my understanding, is that issue is not typically kind of talked about in these settings.
Well, yeah, and you did some reporting with Pam Livingood about what a big deal it was for her to go from just attending this roundtable at work to speaking at the Democratic National Convention. Let's hear a little bit from Pam Livingood about, you know, her experience going from A to Z, so to speak.
And as I told my story, Hillary listened. She even took notes. And then she did something else we don't see a lot of in Washington. She took action. She came up with a plan, one that includes everything from reducing overdoses to expanding access to treatment. To me, that's the kind of leader we need. We need a leader who listens to the voices of ordinary Americans, a leader who treats people with compassion and respect.
Again, that's Pam Livengood of Keene speaking earlier this week at the Democratic National Convention. So, Casey, you mentioned Pam. You mentioned Senator Shaheen. Who else from New Hampshire was able to take that big microphone?
So yesterday we heard from retired Rear Admiral John Hudson, who is also a former dean of the UNH School of Law. And he was there as part of a segment of the evening focusing on national security issues and focused pretty solidly on, in a pretty concentrated way on Donald Trump and challenging his record or his statements on national security issues. He had pretty harsh words for him. He said that regarding his comments that were made earlier in the day about challenging Russia to perhaps hack into United States servers to release more of Hillary Clinton's emails. Um, John Hudson said that's basically, that crosses a pretty significant line. He called Donald Trump kind of a walking, talking recruitment poster for terrorists. He referred to his comments about John McCain last year being, again, something that really crossed the line, and said that he wasn't fit to polish John McCain's boots. And in doing so, Hudson was really trying to blend both his experience in national security, foreign policy arenas, and his experience in the legal arena to say, listen, I'm someone who has an authority in both of these areas, and I, along with many others, think that Donald Trump is unfit to lead in this. So that was his role, to provide some testimony to that effect.
Chris, on the national security front, I'm glad Casey raised that issue, because some folks have said, this convention has not focused enough on the large threats that this country faces.
Yeah, I think you did get a flavor of that last night. You had Admiral Hudson, you had Leon Panetta. But I think part of it is that the crowd in the convention has a lot of people in it who are not interested in those issues, or who on those issues feel that, for instance, drone strikes are fundamentally wrong, that we shouldn't be engaging in them. So you heard some shouting and some chanting during Leon Panetta's speech, for instance.
No more wars.
Exactly. And I think a lot of it is just a decision to focus on areas where there's less division in the party.
Because Republicans focused a lot on this issue, terrorism and the threats that America faces and our role in the world and our need to be strong and so forth. So are they making a calculated effort, Dante, to kind of turn away from this issue because it's tricky for them?
It's tricky internally, as we saw with the speeches last night. And it is tricky externally, because clearly Donald Trump last week pivoted away from an economic message, which has been his bread and butter really during the primary season, and focused much more on crime, terrorism, and security, and which makes sense politically, because the economy is doing fairly well. And so that doesn't perhaps look like the winner of an issue for Republicans as it might have 6-12 months ago. It was interesting last night during Barack Obama's speech, which, as I mentioned earlier, was very sunny, optimistic, Reagan-esque. There was an admission in there that Hillary Clinton will get the job done against ISIS, which is an implication, of course, that it's not going to be done when Barack Obama leaves office at the end of this year in January. And so there's a sense of, there is some unfinished business that Hillary Clinton's going to have to take care of. And for this president to mention that, given that he once kind of dismissed ISIS as being, well, they're nowhere near what Al-Qaeda was interesting. And it's something to watch, I think, over the next 3 months, is how Hillary Clinton presents herself as a national security specialist versus Donald Trump.
Well, and you're right, Dante. National security has been a point of division. I mean, Hillary Clinton voted for the Iraq War. Bernie Sanders went after her on that this time around. Barack Obama, way back when, also went after her on that point. So it's not been an easy issue for this party. So it kind of makes sense that they would set that aside, although people watching the convention may go, hey, wait a minute, I want to know about this. So,
and we'll see how much It'll be very interesting to see how she focuses tonight on what are her issue priorities. How much will she dwell on national security versus, say, the economy or opioid use, immigration, lots of issues to discuss. What are her priorities going to be?
Well, and Casey, just to wrap up with you, any word yet on whether Hillary Rodham Clinton, Bernie Sanders, Tim Kaine, any of those high-profile folks will be visiting New Hampshire once the convention is over?
No official word yet, but I would be surprised if we don't see them in the months ahead, just given the emphasis that we're seeing on the ground in New Hampshire from the Hillary campaign already.
Given the people working, the paid staff,
they have a pretty broad kind of campaign apparatus already in place here and have been working pretty hard to drum up enthusiasm. So I would be surprised if we don't see them at least once or twice over the course of the next few months.
All right, Casey, I know you have a busy day ahead. I will let you go, and we'll talk to you later.
Thanks so much.
Casey McDermott, NHPR digital reporter. Again, she's at the Democratic National Convention covering it for us in Philadelphia. And Dante Scala, Chris Galdieri, last question for you. Chris, once the convention is over, you know, people talk about, was there a bounce? Was it good for the party, good for the nominee, bad, and so forth? What do you think? What's next?
I think we're going to first watch to see what sort of a bounce, if anything, Clinton gets coming out of this. You know, it looks like Donald Trump got a modest bounce coming out of the Republican convention. Enough to make this a pretty tight race right now. And then we need to wait 2 weeks for both of the bounces to fade away. And then I think we'll finally have a sense around mid-August of where this race really stands. And after that, it becomes a question of can the candidate with the lead keep it? And can the candidate who's trailing do anything to make up the difference?
My goodness. Hard to believe it's coming so soon.
In a lot of ways, the election is almost over.
And some people listening might say, good, but we'll set that aside for now. Dante, what about post-convention bounce, post-convention slump? What happens next?
Yeah, I think Chris's advice is well taken that, you know, it's worth ignoring all the polls until things settle down. Especially, this year has been unusual because you have these back-to-back conventions. So there's Republicans get energized during their week, and then Democrats get energized during their week, but then it fades. And so, as Chris said, in mid-August, Labor Day, I think we could start to get a sense. But it's a rare – conventions matter. I mean, they matter arguably more than debates in terms of moving votes. And the person who typically – the candidate who's ahead by that mid-August Labor Day, that's a significant advantage. It's not something that's ephemeral. It's significant. And that candidate behind is really in a hole.
All right. Gentlemen, thank you both very much for being here. I appreciate it.